Thanks, David. I'm Ken Anomenades.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, everybody. Fantastic. I love NA. And and I do. And I've had a great week, and I had a little break from the routine, the normal routine at work, and had what we call a training week, and a bit of the classroom, and a bit of messing around, and going home early, and all that stuff. And I did something that I used to do that I used to really like a few years ago, a couple of years ago, and I was riding home from work on my bike, and I was just thinking about, well, I wonder what I'm going to share about tonight, and oh, I feel I'm on good form, and I was just coming round the corner at Tooley Street, and the bike disappeared from underneath me, and I'm on the floor, sliding down the road, and somebody helped me get to my feet, and the adrenaline is just wearing off, and I'm beginning to ache a bit, and I feel a bit sore, but it's not bothering me too much. Anyway, that was my day. It was good up to then. Who's been to any meetings in the West Midlands? Anybody? I have. Right. On Tuesday, Stourbridge, Gibbs House, Gibbs Road, off Bold Lane, Lye. That meeting, I went there, went and looked it up a few weeks ago, and that particular town in the West Midlands, I know it well. I lived there. I did a lot of using there. And this is the beginning of the end of my using story. there's a main road. This meeting is very close to where it began to end for me. That's why I mentioned it. There's a main road, Stourbridge, Birmingham. And I'm driving along this road, it's the middle of the night, and it's the one time in my life where I had access to a lot of drugs and a lot of money, and it was fantastic. And I'm driving along this road, and it's the middle of the night, I don't know whose car I was in, and I'm on my own, and round about where this meeting is, climbing up a little hill. The Black Country is quite hilly. Anyway, I'm climbing up this hill towards a place called Collie Gate, and I get stopped by the police. And he pulled me over, and he came around to the window, and I said, well, why have you stopped me? And he said, because you're driving up the wrong side of the road, son. And, yeah, and? But, and I'm in trouble, and it's over for a while for me, and I end up having to go to prison. So that was the end of my liberty for a while, and I can remember standing in the court, and I'm still, this is a few hours later, less than 24 hours later, I'm in the court, and the police or the solicitor or something saying, no, very serious offence. No, I can't bail. No, we're not recommending any bail. So I have to go to jail there and then. And I can remember, I think, swaggering down those stairs. Loads of it. Loads of it. And this is no problem. It's not going to bother me. I'm fine. And that lasted about 2 days. I don't know what happens in prison these days. I know that it's different. But I know that we're talking about, it's either 1980 or 1981. I can't quite remember when it was. It's there, very early 1980s. And if you got caught for any drugs offences and you had to go to prison, you were almost the lowest of the low. We all know who the lowest of the low is in prison, but you were the next lowest of the low, and in you went, shoelaces off, belt off, suicide watch. It didn't make any difference at all to your mental state at all. They took no chances whatsoever, and in you went into the cell, and you're left to your own devices. And I know today that you can say things like, I'm on a methadone script, you've got to give me methods, my human rights, I'm entitled to some medication. You had none of that and you were just left to get on with it. And in a way, so I end up in this, and I know I've got a feeling that they do this on purpose as well. So I end up in this cell with Big John, who the last thing Big John wants is a fucking drug addict in his cell withdrawing with us murderers. We don't want this. And I'm scared of Big John. And I'm just beginning to start roasting. And Big John doesn't like it. And one of the officers took it upon himself to tell me what Big John was supposed to have done. And I'm really scared of Big John then. And anyway, the other thing that happened to me before I reached what I know today was my very, very rock bottom. And this is a good 13, 14 years before I got clean, was I commandeered a bacon sandwich out of the kitchen and I stuck it on the hot water pipe that ran across the bottom of the cell and heated it up. So then it was coming out of both ends. And so there's me, drug withdrawal, sickness, diarrhea, and Big John and a bucket in this cell. It's murder. And I end up, this is probably 3 days after swaggering down the stairs, I'm crying under my blanket for me mom. I'm 24, 25 years old. It's that for me, I got clean in prison. There weren't many drugs about in the Knicks, not that I came across in those days. And I walked out of that prison clean. And but that for me was my rock bottom. That was when I was screaming for help and I didn't know what was happening to me, didn't know why I'd got there, couldn't articulate it. Was the depth of my denial wouldn't allow me to accept responsibility for what had happened to me. I couldn't be responsible for what I'd done, and I was in a mess. And I can put my hand on my heart and say my using was never the same. Sometimes it must have been good, sometimes it was, well, I know, I understand that, but that was pivotal for me, and it was downhill from there. That was the top, you know. Before that police officer stopped me that night, drugs were great. Using drugs was great, I was great. And afterwards, I wasn't so great, using wasn't so great, and I ended up dismantled. Drugs dismantled me. And just briefly, I'm trying, a couple of things that happened to me just a few weeks before I got clean. This is the sort of life that I was living. I'm in Peckham in a squat, and there's me, my best mate, and we're off to score. We're walking up the road, it's a 3 or 4 minute walk, end of the street. So off we go, we're all up the road, up the multi-story, we buy our drugs, we go down the stairs in the lift, he goes one way, I go the other way, and I'm walking through these garages, sort of a shortcut, and I walk straight into RoboCop, who, we called him RoboCop. He had an exceedingly business-like fashion about his, the way he went round, the way he walked, and he was after you, and his mission was to clear the streets of Peckham of people like myself and to get us out of the way. And we weren't too keen on RoboCop, and I walked straight into him. I hit him as I walked around the corner. What are you doing? Where are you going? What have you got in your hand there? I'm off. I'm gone. I'm down the road. RoboCop's in hot pursuit, and I know that he's going to get me because I'm sick and he's RoboCop. He doesn't... I'm going to get caught. So I get this parcel that I've got and I'm running a sling over these garages, and then the next thing, rugby tackled, crash down to the ground. Me and RoboCop are scrapping around on the floor and he's on his radio. Big drama, and a few people are looking out the window and all gathering around, and... I think that I'm okay, because I don't know where it's gone, but it's gone over these garages. I think it's landed in the road, over the road. And anyway, with it, yeah, I know, then there's two van loads of police, and everybody's looking around. I'm on the floor with Robocop. He's kneeling on top of me by then, and there's on the garages in the road, and they can't find it. So it's disappeared completely. And I know that there must be some places in London where a bag of gear could lie around all day and nobody would see it, but Green 100 Road in Peckham, no chance. And it was somebody's lucky day, I think, you know, so smackhead walking down the road, head down, wondering when he was going to get his money, and there it just flew over. And I never saw it again, and neither did they. But the consequences have always been court bodies for me. I was of no fixed address. Oh, you didn't appear in court for this, you didn't pay this fine, you forgot to do this. And then I'm inside the system for 3 days, going from Tower Bridge to Camberwell, back to Tower Bridge. Silly, petty stuff, and no drugs, very miserable, and that was it. Then, a few days later, what happened, I was pissed, steaming, absolutely bladdered. And it was a Sunday afternoon, and I'm after Robocop. I've had it. I'm not going to get him. And so Peckham Police Station is in the same road. So I walk down to the bottom of the road. I'm legless, and I'm standing outside Peckham Police Station. Robocop, you ain't come out here. I'm going to kill you, you cunt. staggering about the pavements. And so two police, they come out the door, and they say, look, if you don't fuck off, we're going to nick you. And don't you tell me to fuck off, and so I get nicked and dragged in. I'm in the cell, and that was my. And I was arrested, and had to go to court, and I was convicted of causing alarm, harassment, and distress to a police officer. And that was my last conviction. That was the last time that I got in trouble with the police. And that was indicative of what the last years of my using were like. That was what it involved. And I ended up a few weeks after that incident in a detox in South London, and I got clean. I can't remember volunteering to go there. I can remember a little bit of coercion from the drugs team who dished out the scripts in that area at the time, you know, gentle nudges towards this. And I can remember being frightened that my bridges were going to be burnt. I didn't really want to get clean. I don't know what's going to happen to me. One night, one of the chaps who worked there had me in his room. He said, look, Ken, there's an NA meeting tonight. NA are coming in tonight. And they go up in the games room, and would you like to go? And I can remember saying to this chap, do I have to? And he said, no. Good. But I think you should. And I wanted to do this fella a favour. I think I liked him because he gave me cigarettes and stuff, and he listened to my nonsense and all that sort of stuff. And so I went for him. And there were about five of us in there. Two H&I people came in, and it was a chap and a woman. And the fella who did the share, still with us today, told me that he was 2 years clean, and how he'd been in the same place, took the same sorts of drugs, lived in the same sorts of places, got himself in the same sorts of trouble and stuff. And he shared to me what I can remember today, the little victories that he'd been having over the last couple of years, about how he, I can always remember him saying something about their food in the fridge, and I was impressed with that, and money in his pocket, and employment, and those material things impressed me. And I was so I was devoid of any spiritual generosity. I was unable to be pleased for him. I was riddled with envy. I wanted so much what this chap had. I wasn't listening to how he told me I needed to get it, but I wanted so much what he had. And I know today that I walked out that room with some hope. I know that I did. And I also walked out there with about £5 worth of literature. And I have shared this before. I threw it in the bin. I didn't open any of it, none of it at all. It ended up in the bin. And I haven't used since. And nothing to do with me throwing the literature in the bin. It may have been a little less painful for me if I'd have read a bit, but I wasn't ready to do that just yet. And I was lucky. I was lucky that the window of opportunity to get clean arrived for me when I was in the right place, in the right city. With going back, and I was in the middle of a psychotic episode on my clean day, and it's there or thereabouts, plus or minus 2 days. 22nd of July 1994 was that's the day that I celebrate. Right, it could have been a little before that, could have been a bit after, but I was lucky that window of opportunity presented itself when I was ready to listen, when I was ready to give it a go, when I was in a city where there was NA meetings all day, every day. And that's luck. It can't be anything else. And I was also lucky that there was someone in there who had been to NA before and was dead keen and dragged me along. And off I went. And I started coming to Narcotics Anonymous and collecting key rings and turning up late, sitting at the back, slipping out before the pot went round, and fucking about outside, and going home with another clean day. And that went on for a while. And a few months, and Christmas, this is about 6 months later, a few months later, I walked out of a Christmas do telling myself that I wasn't going to go back. I had some resentment towards some of the people who I'd spent the day with, and I didn't want anything to do with them or Narcotics Anonymous after that. I'm not going anymore. I'm going home and I'm going to do it my way. And so I didn't go out over Christmas. Must have been a couple of weeks. And I do remember people who I'd met in Narcotics Anonymous coming to my little flat, knocking on the door, shouting through the letterbox, "Ken, are you all right? Just wanted to see if you wanted to come to a meeting. Here, there's a number under the door. Call it if you want us to come and pick you up and we'll take you along." And I'm hiding behind the settee, like I'm hiding from the bailiffs. And I don't know why. I don't know why that was happening. That was what I was doing. And it's a bit sad, really. That was what I was up to. And at the same time, the lads from the estates were coming round and knocking on my door. And I was opening the door. And I can remember one chap opening his mouth, and there was what looked like an enormous parcel of drugs in his mouth. And "Can we come in and have a hit in your kitchen?" And I'm saying, "Yes, of course you can. Come on in." So how close to using is that? I don't know. It didn't happen for me. But I was on the way, and I knew that I was on the way. And I went back to Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't know that I had to go back or I needed to go back, but I went back to NA, and I can remember going to a meeting on a Friday night in South Norwood. I don't think it's there anymore. And I can remember saying in this meeting, "I don't know what I'm doing. I know I'm going to be using if I don't do something. I've got to stop coming into meetings, talking bollocks. I'm going to get myself a sponsor and I'm going to have a go at these steps. And I think that was the most important NA meeting I've ever been to, because I think that I surrendered. I think that was it. That's what had happened for me. I'd given up. Before then, recovery or staying clean had been an intellectual exercise. How much more of this am I going to be able to take before I crack? That was what was happening with me, and I don't think that it was much more. I don't think that I would have been able to take too much more of that. So that was what I said I was going to do. That's what I did. I asked someone to sponsor me and guide me through the steps of the program, and it worked for me. And I'm here to say that it worked for me. I'm also here to say that I'm not an expert and I'm not an authority, but I do have a go, and that's what's done it for me. I've tried, I'm still willing to try. There are times when I really don't think that I understand, but I do know that it's simple. And I also know, if we think about it, that we can write our program of recovery in big letters on a sheet of A4 paper. That's how simple this is. And I'm going to say now, if you come up to me and ever ask me, what's your understanding of step 7, Ken? If I can't tell you in 2 minutes what I think it is, then I either don't know what I'm talking about, which is possible, or I'm making it too complicated. I don't know how many times I've sat in Narcotics Anonymous meetings and heard, simple program, written so simply, keep it simple. I don't know how many times I've heard it, but I think I've walked away from meetings more times than I've heard it, thinking it's very complicated and I don't understand, and I might need some help with this. I might need some proper scientific study with this particular step. I've done that so many times. But I'm here tonight. Hopefully, if I've got anything useful to say, please keep it simple. Please keep it simple. Do what it says on the tin. Do that and you're going to be okay. It works for us. It worked for me. I am definitely not the same person that walked into Narcotics Anonymous 13 years ago. I know that I'm not. I know that I've changed. I know that things have happened for me. I know that I've surrendered. I know I've given up. Using is over for me. It's finished. No more. No more using for me. I've surrendered. I'm not going to fight it anymore. No more. I'm looking for a solution. That's my quest. That's my second step. I know there's an answer. I can get myself well. I know that I can. I've got no doubt right now, this second, that I can get myself well through our program of recovery. And I know that I've got to commit myself to doing that. I know it's a commitment. And I understand what commitment means today. I know what it means. It doesn't mean, oh, well, I said that at the time, but I didn't really, oh, well, I'm not too sure now. If it said, I'm going to do it, it means I'm going to do it. If when I took my third step, or when I take that step and I practice that step, I'm committing myself to the NA way of life, to the Narcotics way of life, Narcotics Anonymous way of life, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it. I'm on the bus. I'm not going to get off the bus. I haven't got off it yet. I'm here to stay. I'm going nowhere. That's step 3. I have a commitment to keep myself clean and to practice the principles of this program. When I took the fourth step for the first time, I know that I was very sick. I know that I was very unwell. And I know that it was my first honest, or my first stab, my first go at being honest. And I know I've taken other inventories. I've done them since, and I know that I am able to be 15 times more honest than I was when I took that first step, 25 times more thorough. But none of them have been anywhere near as important as that first stab at being honest, my first go at doing it. And I also, believe me, if it was an exam, I would have failed, because it wasn't as honest and as thorough as I could be. But I tried. I had a go. I had a go, and it worked for me. And when I took my fifth step, my courage did fail me. There were a couple of things that I was unable to share. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready to own up to some of the stuff that I was capable of. I wasn't ready to do it. I thought maybe I was, but I wasn't. But I've become ready since. I've learned how to be honest. I've learned how to be thorough. I've learned how to take inventory. I don't know why I expected to be perfect the first time round. With my six and seven steps, I am today willing to change. I know that I want to change. I've had enough. I've had enough. I don't want no more greed. I don't want no more intolerance. I don't want no more murderous jealousy. I don't want no more dishonesty, deceit, impatience. I've had enough of it. It drives me mad. It doesn't. I can't walk around with it anymore. I have to, but I don't want to. Just remind myself there. The seventh step for me, I've got to tell myself that I don't have to react negatively to negative feelings anymore. I don't have to. I'm going to, but I don't have to. It's not necessary. I can't any longer say, "You made me do it." Now look what you've made me do. I can't do that anymore. Those days are over, too. I'm responsible. I know. Just this. I hear it. I think we all hear it all the time. I'm not too sure about this step six and seven. Do your defects really get removed? No, I don't think so. What I know is this. If I was to live my life today, and I've tried my best, the NA way, tried to live my life according to God's will, using good, orderly direction, then there's no room in my life for any defects of character. Just for today, I know that it's possible. And I know that it's possible. And I know that I'm not perfect. But I do know that I'm heading in the right direction. And I do know that on good days, I'm doing the best that I can. I am trying. Again, I'm giving it a go. And that's the key for me. Eight and nine, this is where I really do think we need to do what it says on the tin. We made a list of all people we had harmed. Who can't do that? Please, I'm not having it. I'm sorry. I can't, not right now. I'm not being intolerant. But we made a list of all people we had harmed. I can do that. I can do it. It's not difficult for me to understand what that step is asking, the first part of that step is asking me to do, and become willing to make amends to those people that we'd harmed. A little more tricky, and takes a little more effort, and a little more patience, and a little more time. But it's great when you do, and when you get the opportunity to do it. And I've had the opportunity to make many, many amends. I've had the opportunity to not make some as well. They have passed me by. The opportunities have arisen. And again, my courage has failed me. And I couldn't quite, summon it up or find it in me to go and own up to some of the things I've done and try and get things put right. But I have made amends in many, many areas, and like Hayley, I've been lucky with my family. My children are a bit older, but they are so important to me today. Many of you know that they ended up in care and institutions. I had a daughter who was 9 years old and needed to be kept in a secure institution because of severe behavioural difficulties. And I'm going to take issue with a bit of the NA literature, and I try hard not to, but I am not convinced that most of all I harm myself. I'm sorry, but I don't think that I did. I think that possibly I caused a little more damage to those people. I was supposed to be responsible for them, and the biggest, it's not a crime, but by my biggest failure with my children was neglect. I was unable to do it. I know that I love them, but drugs came first, and that was the way it was for me, and I was unable to do the things that I needed to do, and the state had to do it for me. And it was a long way back for all of us, but it's been a great story and a fantastic journey for all of us, well, for me. And I've really today, I can remember treating it like a service commitment. You know, I've got tea at so and so, and a GSR. Oh, I'm a dad as well. I'm a 2 year commitment and vice dad for a year. It was a chore. It was just a big effort. Two of them live 120 miles away. One of them wasn't even in my life, and two of them lived 120 miles away. They were teenagers. They got me nerves. They got pregnant, unsuitable boyfriends, and my youngest one's learnt that, actually. I only ever meet the ones she knows that I'm going to approve of. It was just a chore, and I didn't hate it or detest it, but it exhausted me. But I kept turning up, and so did they, and we're getting there, and we're all on the right track today. And I'm off to Birmingham tomorrow, and I'm going to the football, off to the villa with my eldest daughter's bloke, who's feeling fat, so that's good, that's all good stuff, and he knows what to talk about when I walk in the door, and it's cool, and she's happy with that because it's all off her, and I don't have to take too much. It's a bit messy in here, isn't it, and all that sort of stuff. And what's he doing going out dressed like that, and all that sort of stuff, that's gone. And we're getting on really well with my eldest daughter. And a lot of you know the story. My youngest daughter was in care and institution when I came into recovery, and after a couple of years with good guidance and support from NA members and my sponsor, went through all the right channels and the social services and tried to establish contact with her, and she was 13, and she didn't want to see me, and I was very, very disappointed. It was a big setback for me, and made me very miserable. It's a simple thing that he said, but I do remember my sponsor saying, just because she said no today doesn't mean she's going to say no tomorrow. Of course it doesn't. She didn't say no a while later, and I ended up with a 16-year-old girl on my doorstep. Anyway, straight out of the care system, nuts. I'm not much better. I'm about 6-7 years clean, and it's Walt Disney. It's Oprah Winfrey, you know. Haven't seen her since she was 18 months old. She doesn't know who I am, and we're living together. Fantastic, isn't it? You know. And 6 weeks later, 5:30, Saturday morning, the police kicking my door in, pulling us apart because we're killing each other. Absolutely tearing each other apart. Rolling around on the floor, throwing things. And he said, I'm going to kill this girl. And I really am. And she's going to kill me too. And it's awful. Really embarrassing. And all I can remember thinking is, what are my sponsees going to think about this? You know, I can't. She's still there. She's 23 now. She's still at home doing the Christmas shopping. And I love her so much. And two things I need to share. I have managed to put things right, and I am managing to get things, make sure that they stay right. We don't talk much, and we're still a bit sticky with the old physical and emotional affection, because, you know, that's the way that it is with us. And I was in my bedroom the other day, a couple of weeks ago, less than 10 days ago, and she came into my room and said, "Dad, I want to talk to you about something. I'm not very well. Don't worry. I don't want you to worry, but I've got to go into hospital, and they're going to have a look, and I don't want you to worry." We spent maybe 2-3 hours. She came and sat on my bed. She never comes into my bedroom when I'm there, and we sat on the bed and we spoke for about 3 hours, and I was closer to that girl than I've ever been in my life. And it reminded me, I was talking with Simon earlier about how even the most difficult things can bring into our lives many gifts. And of course I don't want her to be seriously ill, and I am worried. Let's hope that she's not, and I'm going to go to the hospital with her, and I'm going to be a dad, and I'm going to be there for her. And I don't care what she's done and who she's done it with right now. I don't care, because I'm doing what I need to do, and I'm happy to do it, and it's no longer a chore for me. And I'll just finish on this. I did bring it because I know today I was intensely jealous of my brother when I was growing up, my sister, because I really believe my mum loved them more. And I've managed to get that on my step four, first one. I know, and I've learned that I have no favourites with my kids, but I do know that I have to love them differently. I had this email, and this was this week, off one of my daughters, and it says, it's talking a little bit about Van Morrison. We're talking about Van Morrison. And it says, she's 30 years old, this woman. "Do you remember when I used to sing to you, 'Have I told you lately that I love you? Have I told you lately that I care? I know that I am a difficult woman to love, but I do love you, Dad. I do. I just don't tell you often enough.'" And that's the cap on the toothpaste for me. That's recovery. I'm lucky. I know that. I understand that. And I know that some of us are going to go through our recovery maybe not even knowing who our children are and stuff. But I'm grateful for that today. Thanks very much for listening. Keep coming back. Keep turning up. And of course it gets better. And thank you.